You are listening to WHYY 90.9 FM. Good afternoon. I'm Cherry Gregg, and this is a Studio 2 Extra. Fawn Weaver never set out to build a whiskey empire, but in just 7 years, the serial entrepreneur and author turned Uncle Nearest Premium Whiskey into the most successful Black-owned liquor brand in America. Her best-selling book, Love and Whiskey, tells the untold story of Nearest Green, the formerly enslaved master distiller who taught Jack Daniel how to make Tennessee whiskey. I spoke with Weaver about uncovering history, building a billion-dollar brand, and what's next for Uncle Nearest. You were not looking to start a whiskey brand.
No, who would? People assume that it is harder for me because I'm an African-American woman. Mm-hmm. So both the gender and the color. I said, I've seen more white men fall out, flare out, fail since I came into this industry than any other gender or race. This is the one place where it's not about race. It's not about color. They trying to block everybody from succeeding. The spirit conglomerates have run this thing for a really long time, and they've got it down to a science. You come into this industry, you got two choices. You fail or you sell. Fail or sell, meaning if you can by any chance not fail, your other option is to have one of the spirit conglomerates buy you. You can only grow to a certain level, or at least that was the thought before I challenged it, because that's how the industry has been set up.
And you're like, not selling.
No, I was like, so I'll take option C. Y'all gave me A and B. I'm going to fill in the blank and I'm going to create an option C.
I had heard of Uncle Nearest a few years ago. There were like all these tastings around the city and everybody was talking about the story of Nearest Green, the story that sort of caught your eye. Because you, just to be clear, you were not in the spirit business 10 years ago.
No, absolutely not. I wasn't in the spirit business 8 years ago. No.
You went on a trip to Singapore, mm-hmm. saw a New York Times article, and that article literally changed your life. Tell me about the story that hooked you in.
What's wild is in the New York Times, it wasn't the story. It was just the picture in the headline. Jack Daniel's embraces a hidden ingredient, help from a slave. The photo is the only known photograph Jack Daniel had took while he was alive with other people. And in this photograph, he has all of his leadership, and seated to his immediate right is the son of Nearest Green, George Green. But more importantly than seated to his right is that the entire photo, where you would expect for Jack Daniel to be the center, he is not. Jack is off center. Who he put in the center is Nearest's son, George. So as soon as that article came out, God bless us, Black Twitter. God bless us. Black Twitter decided from a photo and a headline that Jack Daniel stole the recipe, hid the slave, and literally did not credit him. And I said,
that's the story I heard.
That's the story every Black person heard.
Yes.
And I said, Black Twitter, what I love about it is there's so much power there mm-hmm. to galvanize. The challenge is when we get a story wrong, we all get fired up and lit up about it. But whoever started it, mm-hmm. it became fact in our community. But I looked at it and said, this makes no sense. If you want to hide an enslaved master distiller, then you would do what everybody in Kentucky did, because they had that too. Mm-hmm. We don't know a single one of their distillers, even though if you are a Kentucky bourbon and you were distilling in the 19th century, you had a Black distiller. Mm-hmm. We don't know any of their names. We've not seen any photographs. So what was the difference? Why were we now seeing Nearest's son, George Green? And it was very simple. When I looked at that photo and I saw George in the center, I said, oh, no. Jack isn't trying to hide this man. He's trying to make sure America is never able to erase this man. It was a legacy he was preserving. And we can confirm that, because then in 1967, you have a white reporter from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, who is hired by Jack's family to come write the authoritative biography for Jack Daniel. He had full access to all of Jack's family, to everybody who knew him, everybody who had ever touched him. Jack died early, and most people in Lynchburg live to like 100. Like mm-hmm. if you die at 95 in Lynchburg, people crying like you were 40. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. that is just the nature of it. And so the people that were still alive to be interviewed, they knew Jack.
Yeah.
And they mentioned Nearest and his boys so many times that Nearest, George, and Eli Green were mentioned in Jack Daniel's official biography more times than Jack's own family.
Wow.
And so you take that coupled with Jack positioned George Green as the center of the photo, and I was convinced that Jack was an ally.
And you saw this story between Jack Daniel and Nearest Green as a love story.
I saw it as love, honor, and respect, because the amount, think about it this way. You are a white man in the mid 19th century, in the mid to late 19th century. You are the person, kind of the big guy in town, right? You are Jack Daniel. You are the person who walks around in a top hat and tails and lifts, because he only grew to be 5'2", even full grown. And so you are a walking, talking billboard for your brand. Your brand is becoming known around the world as being one of the best whiskeys. And you choose to flank yourself with Black people in a town called Lynchburg, Tennessee. Do you know how much hate he would have gotten?
And just to be clear, Nearest Green taught Jack Daniel how to make whiskey.
Not only did he teach him how to make Tennessee whiskey, but, and the reason why I say Tennessee whiskey is because Tennessee whiskey, as far as I'm concerned, is if African Americans don't drink nothing else in this country, we should be drinking Tennessee whiskey, because it's the only product that we were credited equally as Americans. Meaning, we only know what Tennessee whiskey is because Jack's family is actually who filed for the distinguishment from bourbon. It is still a straight bourbon whiskey. That's what it is. But they added this additional step that they credited the West Africans, the enslaved people, with bringing to America. Mm-hmm. And so they're on record in the press and saying this process, the Lincoln County process, it was taught by the enslaved people. And they're the ones doing it.
Could you give us a brief understanding of how bourbon is made?
The core piece of it is what it's made with. It must be a cereal grain. So for us, we use corn, malted barley, and rye. Some may use malted wheat, but it must be you have to start with a cereal grain. And to be a bourbon, it must be at least 51% corn.
Mm.
Bourbon can be made anywhere in America, but Tennessee whiskey obviously can only be made in Tennessee.
And so what's this extra step?
It is taking a traditional bourbon distillate, running it through sugar maple charcoal to remove the impurities. So that's why if someone is sipping on Uncle Nearest literally all night, as long as you don't add carbonation or sugar, and as long as you end with water, you're going to wake up in the morning and not have a hangover.
You were not trying to get in the whiskey business.
Mm-mm.
You went to Tennessee to research this book.
Yeah.
You were like, I'm going to write about this. This is a big deal.
Yeah.
You get there and it's like this slippery slope. Next thing you know, you buy in the farm.
Yeah.
The Call Farm.
Let's call it what it is. The original Jack Daniel Distillery.
You buy
number seven.
But then most people would have been like, you know, I don't need to get into the whiskey business. This is about the story. The story is disruptive to the entire the spirit business, the whiskey business, one of the most iconic brands in the world, right? You could have still just focused on the book. You could have worked with the Jack Daniel company, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just produced a bottle of whiskey through them.
Mm-hmm.
But you decided to start your own company.
Yeah.
Why?
Jack Daniel, in their history, they've had a master distiller line for quite some time. But if I listed for you the names of every one of Jack's master distillers, you wouldn't know any of their names except Nearest. That was why. Because their job is Jack. And so everything that they do is additive to Jack. I believed that Nearest deserved his own legacy. And that couldn't be their responsibility, because their responsibility is Jack. And so I looked at it and you know, there were family members within Nearest's family that as this was going on, all of the elders supported me doing it. But some of the younger ones were like, look, we feel like Jack should be the one to do it. And the elder said, if Jack wanted to do it, they would have already done it. And what we're not going to do is to have it be a part-time thing. If we're going to do it, we're going to do it right. Mm-hmm. And Fawn doesn't know what she's doing, but we're going to back her anyway. And that was the approach that the elders and the family took, is Fawn, we trust her to figure it out more than we trust them to do right by this.
And by the way, you met with so many people the town of Lynchburg. Everybody. They were going through closets and boxes and pulling out documents. You put ads in the paper for the town and had people bring it. And to me, when I read your book, one of the things that stood out to me was so many of the serendipitous moments.
Yeah. The entire thing is serendipitous.
I mean, your birthday.
Right.
September 5th. Same birthday as Jack Daniel.
Yeah.
The same birthday as many of the keepers of the legacy.
Of all of the keepers of the legacy.
Of Nearest Green.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Then every time you read in the book about Jack Daniel at Nearest Green, you see white butterflies.
Yeah. The same too.
And I'm just like, did you feel guided? Because
no question.
You were just running into people. I mean, it was like you went there one time and met so many people within hours of your arrival.
If I didn't feel as though this was a mandate from God for me to build this out and finish this out, I would have passed this on to somebody a long time ago, because the amount of work that it takes to get the most minimal amount of progress in this industry is something that most people give up on. But I was real clear from very early on, from even before the time Uncle Nearest sold his first bottle, I was real clear, this is a mandate. And so a lot of people, they go through their life looking for purpose. I don't, because I believe I am my purpose. Mm. My purpose is with me at all times, but every season has different assignments, has different mandates, has different things, different open doors that I'm set to walk through. And once those doors are open, I'm not going to walk through them and quit. And so I stick to my assignment until it's done. So for this, I know the time frame on this, and y'all going to see me for a long time.
But what was so interesting that you never hesitated.
No.
You went to the Dan Call Farm, distillery number 7. You decided, you and your husband, Keith, shout out to a supportive mate.
Listen, my man.
Your man was on board.
No joke.
And y'all were like, we're buying this farm.
Yeah.
What we going to do? Like within days.
Yeah.
Of arriving in Lynchburg.
Mm-hmm.
And then said, we're going to figure it out. We're going to commit.
Yeah.
And when did you know that this was the path forward? When did you feel it?
So I have a hack for that. Because a lot of people say, well, how do you know it's God? I make him prove it. He tells us throughout his word, test me. I don't know why people are so afraid to do that. So I do. And for me, it's very simple. Lord, if this is the path for me, open the door in such a way that no man can close it, including me, because we're good for self-sabotage. And if it is not for me, then close the door in such a way that no man can open it, including me. So if I'm walking through an open door, I'm confident he opened it, because that prayer shuts the doors I'm not supposed to go through. So does it mean that when I walk through the door, it's easy on the other side? Absolutely not. I feel like the Lord is like, look, you gonna have the same path as Carnegie, Rockefeller, and Vanderbilt. It's gonna kick your butt. But that's the cost of admission on at this level.
Yeah, and now $1 billion company.
Yep.
In record time.
Yeah.
And growing.
Well, not record when you compare it to technology, but to a trillion and you're like, they don't even have any revenue.
Record time for a spirit brand.
Absolutely.
And so, and now you immediately sort of make sure you have connection with the family.
Yeah.
The kids get scholarships.
All of them.
You have a family member actually working in as your master blender.
Yeah. Nearest's great, great granddaughter is our master blender. She is the reason we're the most awarded bourbon. And she is now 4-time master blender of the year. The industry has never seen anybody like her before.
And Victoria, her name is Victoria.
Victoria Edie Butler.
And I had to give her.
We call her Queen V.
Queen V.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems like all the pieces just were in place. But one of the things about Uncle Nearest is that I feel like the story is so good that people can't help but to support it.
It is one of the greatest American stories, hard stop. Period. It is not one of the greatest African-American stories. It's not one of the greatest Southern stories. It's not one of the great. It's one of the greatest American stories, period. You have an ally in the 19th century who decides, oh, no, no, you're going to treat my master distiller with respect. You're going to treat his sons with respect. Mm. I am going to pay him what white people are paid. When you look at the records, Nears Green, immediately following the Civil War, had more money than all of his white neighbors and more than any African-American in the entire county. Mm. And he was a distiller. There's always this question of money. And, well, why is it Nears's family rich? I'm like, I hate to be the one to bust your bubble, but Nears's family is actually doing better than Jack's family.
Wow.
By far.
Wow.
So when I visit Nears's family around this country, their success, their education, their lives. Now, is that all of them? No, but they've done well. When I visit Jack's family, there's literally only one person who has done well, and that person passed away.
Yeah.
Recently. And ironically, she was a teetotaler. She never touched this stuff.
Wow.
But Jack's family otherwise are working people. They are still in their overalls. They're still out on the farms. They're working. Where you have, you know, Nears is one of his descendants is the head of security for Meta.
Their families were interconnected for generations.
Generations.
It's such a beautiful story. But I got to ask you, I mean, what's the future? Uncle Nearest will stay whole?
Yeah. Last year we became the largest vineyard cognac grapes. They're Grand Champagne grapes. We became the largest vineyard owner in the city of Cognac, France. That's so important to note, because when that story comes out and y'all see the serendipity that happened with that story, nothing mirrors Uncle Nearest like when that cognac brand comes out.
Wow.
There's never been an American able to buy vineyards there. They won't let you just come in there and buy vineyards. You have to convince them that you are the best steward for every future generation.
And you are a wonderful salesperson.
I'm all right.
And that's probably why they decided, yes, you could do this.
Yeah.
And it makes me think about you being the steward of the Nearest Green legacy.
It's the same thing. I sat with them. I sat with the mayor of Cognac, the president of Grand Champagne, the Madame Massacre, that is the one person who is designated with deciding who is the best stewards for these properties, for this vineyards. And when I sat with them, I shared with them how I saw this. And they said, tell us how you're looking at the next 25 years. I said, I can tell you how I'm looking at the next century.
Mm.
That was the difference.
Yeah. And that's how you got it. And this is sort of, I feel, just reading the book and just hearing how the stars just aligned for you.
Mm-hmm.
You know exactly where you're here. You know, even though you can't see, you know where to step.
Mm-hmm.
Does it feel heavy carrying this legacy?
It doesn't feel heavy carrying the legacy, but the work is hard.
Yeah.
The work is hard. The work is challenging. There is always a whack-a-mole game that's going on. Once you think you have something resolved, something else pops up. And that's the nature of it. I think it's a part of why it's so important for us as African-Americans to understand the history of how every American Titan built in this country.
What's the one mind shift that you had to make in order to go from who you were 8 years ago to becoming the leader of a billion-dollar brand?
The mind shift. No matter what, don't slow down. No matter what, I don't care if everything around is burning. Trust you're going to be able to put those fires out. Keep moving forward. Where before, when fires would pop up, I would stop to tend to those. Can't do that.
Yeah.
So I had to learn the art of moving forward while putting out fires.
That's the multitasking superpower. Mm-hmm. And my last question was, what would you say to that version of yourself 8 years ago before you read that article and started on this journey? What would be the piece of advice you would give her?
Oh, this is going to be rough. It's going to be rough. And you are going to have to make sure that God goes before you in everything. When you're behind him and you're very clear, this is the direction, this is the path, I'm not going to go ahead, then you can have fires all around and you're like, yeah. Uh-huh. That's your job is to burn. My job is to go forward.
First of all, I just want to say thank you so much, Fawn Weaver.
Thank you.
For coming in. I was so excited about this interview. Your story is so inspiring. And keep going.
Thank you.
That was Fawn Weaver, CEO of Uncle Nearest Premium Whiskey and author of Love and Whiskey, the remarkable true story of Jack Daniel, his master distiller, Nearest Green, and the improbable rise of Uncle Nearest. Weaver will be in Philadelphia on March 19th at 7 p.m. at the Free Library of Philadelphia. And if you like what you heard, subscribe to the Studio 2 podcast and be sure to leave a review. You can catch a full hour of Studio 2 every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at noon right here on WHYY 90.9 FM or streaming on WHYY's YouTube channel. Studio 2 is produced by Debbie Builder, Paige Murray Bessler, and Andreas Copes. Al Banks engineered this Studio 2 extra. From WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg. Thanks so much for listening.